Support for KPCW comes from the Sundance Film Festival, a nonprofit organization back in Utah, January 18th through the 28th, with screenings in Park City, Salt Lake City, and the Sundance Mountain Resort. Check out the full program of world premiere films, virtual reality filmmaker panel conversations, music, and more. Get tickets now at sundance.org/festival.
Proud sponsor of KPCW, DeJoria Center features State Road Tavern and Restaurant with new winter hours Thursday through Sunday, 5 to 9 p.m. State Road Restaurant welcoming guests of all ages. State Road Tavern, 21 and older. For more information, stateroadtavern.com or 435-783-3530.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us this morning on KPCW Sundance Week. Rick, how you doing?
Okay. This is the Sundance Reel on the weekend, and I'm Rhett Bruff, and this is my co-host, Stacy Demolsky, who is well-known as a stand-up comic, short filmmaker. She's in the tallest chair.
Yeah, really short.
Short filmmaker. And self-published author and just multitasking all over the place.
Yeah.
And to start off the program this morning, appropriately, we have some people from the shorts program and a film called Worm. Christopher Winterbauer and the lead actors Reed Miller sharing a microphone with his co-star. Is it Sky Popov?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, you guys, welcome.
Are we on the air? Okay. Well, then don't do that to me. All right, I'm Stacy Demolsky, and with us today we have Christopher Winterbauer. I said that right.
You did.
Reed
Thank
Miller
you.
And Sky Popov. How do you say it? Popov. You'll just answer
everything.
To anything,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why not?
Cool. All right. So I actually went to the world premiere back in Los Angeles a couple of months ago, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Since then, I've seen it three times. And I want to know, when you, Chris, went to cast, did you have somebody in mind? Because when you see this film, Reed and Sky, actually all four actors are perfect. I mean, they are. I've never seen anything in short program so well cast. So how did you find these guys? Because then I want to get their take on it too. How did you find your lead actors?
Sure. So we were doing this as a student film, so we didn't have a lot of money. We found a casting director who was great named Brad Gilmore in Hollywood. And he knew that I wanted very kind of unconventional, natural actors. And
mm-hmm.
we did a lot of rounds. I didn't know who I wanted or what I wanted, but the minute these guys came in, I knew we were
and I can see
shape.
Why. So tell us what the movie is about. Just give us a synopsis.
So Worm is a coming-of-age story that mm-hmm. takes place in an alternate reality 1990s where kids wear electronic monitoring collars that track their sexual and emotional development as they go through their life. It's a very weird, absurdist take on your classic coming-of-age story.
Mm-hmm. The tone and the look, it's very almost kind of sci-fi 90s.
Yes.
So did you live in a neighborhood like that?
yeah. When Stacy told me the plot, I said, you know, what, after their kissed, they graduate to the Hunger Games? I mean, what's going
yeah.
on here?
I grew up in Seattle.
It totally looks like Seattle.
Yeah, but around Microsoft, and I worked for Intel for a while before I ever did movies. And I've always been fascinated by the systems that we create to try to help people keep up or stay in line, and how they always backfire,
mm-hmm.
and the law of unintended consequences, and what would it be like if we had something that's supposed to keep people up and ends up making someone feel left out
mm-hmm.
more than ever.
Yep.
Yeah.
You nailed it. So you guys, Reed and Sky, what did you think when you saw the script? And what did you think? Like a collar for what now?
I was very confused at first, but then as I read through the script, I started to understand a lot of the metaphors and the symbolism, and I was I mean, I was in love with it the moment I read it. And, you know, it's an honor to get to bring the script to life, especially because it's so unique and there's nothing like it, like, at all. I mean, I've never seen another movie with, like, where they make kids wear collars and have to, you know, like, it's just very... It may not seem like it represents what's happening today, but it kind of is, actually.
Mm-hmm. And then, Sky, how did you feel about... I don't want to give anything away, but you are a pivotal person in Worm's life, and there's a moment when you kind of have to let him down easy. Mm-hmm. So have you had that moment in real life where you had to tell a boy, I don't think so?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm not as, like, cruel as Izzy was, but that has happened before.
Yeah, it did. Details. Yeah. We want details.
You want the juice? Okay.
It's only here at Sundance.
It's Park City. Nobody else will know.
Okay. Well, let me just say, not a lot of guys are as polite as Worm was. So
he was a gentleman, wasn't he?
Yes.
He was very gracious.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen in real life. No, but Worm is such like a, he's such a character, mm-hmm. you know, and he has so many feelings that it's hard for him to express, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that I think Reed played him was very subtle, but in the scene that we're talking about here,
mm-hmm.
you can see a lot of the emotions that was going on in the scene that happen in real life.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That was my favorite scene, actually. That scene had a lot of heart and a lot of authenticity.
Yeah.
And you guys played it, I thought, perfectly. I really, really enjoyed it.
Well, I have
it.
A lot of experience with that, so it's too hard.
Of course you do, Reed. So you said this was a school project or a student project at which university?
USC, University of Southern California.
And was this a grad program?
Yes. This was my thesis film for the MFA program there.
Okay. So I'm taking you graduated.
I did. Yeah,
they
I graduated.
Said, okay,
I graduated in May. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So has this film, it's such a little gem, what's it led to?
I mean, it's been incredible. I mean, for just me personally, it got me representation, and I'm working on a featured version of this now that,
ooh.
You know, it's in early stages, but we're hopeful mm-hmm. we'll go forward. A couple other projects in early stages that we're hopeful mm-hmm. to go forward, but it's gotten a great response, more than I ever hoped for, and mm-hmm. Has put me and my wife a little bit at ease in such a volatile industry. So
mm-hmm.
it's been great.
Is this your first time at Sundance?
It is, yes.
So what do you think?
It's beautiful and very warm, receptive audiences. Mm-hmm. The toughest is sometimes you go to a film festival and don't get a laugh, and that can be very uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
If people are not interested in comedy. But I think here they're very open to
mm-hmm.
it.
It's a very diverse crowd here.
Yeah.
So what about you? I'd always like to get young people's take on this. I mean, it's your first time at Sundance.
Yeah.
What do you think?
What is happening? It's beautiful here. Oh my gosh, the snow, there's a lot of it, so there's that. The movies that I've seen are incredible,
mm-hmm.
and it's just such an honor to be among such amazing films.
Mm-hmm.
So.
How about you, Reed?
I mean, she kind of put it in a great way, but I mean, it's pretty, like, I have like 8 words going through my mind. Like it's incredible. It's amazing. It's weird.
Weird is a good one.
But weird in a good way.
Yeah.
And you know, luckily, Worm is in a block with some other great films.
I agree.
So you know, it's kind of interesting. You know, when you go to like a film festival, that's not like Sundance, but like another film festival, and it's like all the other films are maybe not as good. And, like, you know, like, Worm sticks out, yeah, but it's nice to be able to, like, meet people that are just as creative and just as talented.
Yes.
You know, so mm-hmm. That's definitely been awesome to meet the directors of these other films and to get to know them and what their thought process was on their films.
So what's next for you guys? What are you coming up? You got any big acting gigs on the horizon you can talk about?
I just finished a film, which is called Freddy. It's like... E.T. meets Transformers, which I'm the lead in.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun family movie. The premiere's in February, so I'm pumped for that. I have a TV show that I'm the lead in called Play by Play, which you can find on Go90, which is a free app, which you can get on your phone or on the computer. And it's like a coming-of-age 90s sports rom-com.
It reminds me of The Wonder Years, only it's set in... the Kevin Arnold character, which you play, is set in the 1990s instead of the 1970s.
Yeah, and it was so fun to get to be in that era again because, you know, Worm and Play by Play are, like, nothing alike, but it was cool to get to go back to that era for a little bit. And I shot seasons 2 and 3 just a couple months ago, and that'll be coming out sometime this year. I'm not... too sure when yet, but that will be soon.
Mm-hmm. And Sky, how about you?
I've actually been writing a lot more than I've been acting. I've always loved to write. I've written down like little things here and there, you know, just cool ideas that I had. But now I'm actually sitting down with the most amazing writing partner, and we're writing a screenplay. And I don't want to give like too much of it away because, I mean, nothing's set in stone yet because, you know, we've written like 20 some pages, but. It's a thriller. It's a lot of fun. I love working with someone who has the same passion as I do about movies. And I'm just very...
Yeah, collaboration in this industry is a lot of fun.
Yeah, especially when you find the right person to collaborate with.
Yeah.
Has Christopher told you if he turns this into a feature film, is he going to do it quick enough before you guys grow out of the roles?
Well... Let me chime in real quick before I see you, Chris. I'm 18, but I look like I'm 12. So, yeah, no, I see you. Yeah. I'm just waiting patiently because I have a feeling that everything comes full circle. And, you know, it was amazing to work with Chris. And I know Sky can agree. You know, he's pretty genius. And
we can say we knew him when.
Yeah. No, really. Seriously, though, for real. So I'm not really worried about that.
So there was something in the movie. The internet kind of played a character and a role. Everything was, have you seen the internet? It's going to be big. You know, so tell us a little bit about that running thread through there, because that was really cute.
I mean, part of it was just the... way I remember the 90s and not knowing what the internet was but really wanting to. It's a movie about a character who doesn't want to change, who doesn't want to have to grow up, who doesn't want to move forward, and the whole world is hurtling past him, and the internet is kind of represents that, I think. He reads a dictionary all day, basically. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was just really fun. And this also, I just love... when people refer to it as the internet.
The internet.
Yeah.
So, cool.
Awesome.
The net, yes. Well, the Worm is coming its way. You're in Shorts Program number 4, so it looks like your next time up is, well, you're trekking down to Salt Lake today, I guess.
Yep.
And then the next chance to see it locally is tomorrow at the Redstone 2, 1 p.m. And you wrap up... Friday at the Holiday 4 at 10 p.m. And with Stacy's recommendation, you got a great boost. So
thank you guys so much for having us.
Go out and see this Shorts Block 4. You guys will love it. Thanks
Please
for coming
do.
In.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Support for KPCW programming comes from Sammy's Bistro on Bonanza Drive, open daily at 11 a.m. Sammy'sBistro.com, the corporation for public broadcasting and listeners like you.
Hello, this is Carolyn, Executive Director at Recycle Utah. Did you know that it will take up to 500 years for an aluminum can to decompose in the landfill? Be kind to the earth and recycle aluminum, steel, and tin cans, as well as old metal appliances, at Recycle Utah. Recycle Utah is your local nonprofit recycling drop-off center, bringing water conservation ideas to you for over 25 years, and we support KPCW.
Nuzzles & Co. Pet Rescue and Adoption is located right here in Park City. Since 1990, we have been rescuing animals in need and helping them get ready for their forever homes. When each Nuzzle Pal is ready for their new home, we take them to our adoption center and Tanger Outlets, where our experienced matchmakers help them find true love. At Nuzzles & Co., love is a four-legged word. Visit our website at nuzzlesandco.org for more information. Nuzzles & Co. is a nonprofit organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
Sundance Reel on the weekend, and I'm Rhett Bruff again here with Stacy Domalski, and another group of filmmakers from the short program. We have the director of the film Fauve. Tell me, Jeremy, how to pronounce that correctly.
It's Fauve. Fauve is great.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it. All right. That's Jeremy Comte. And introduce the members of your crew that are with you.
So I'm with Evren Boisjoli, my producer, and Maria Grasset Turgeon, my other producer.
And this I did see a screener of this. So this is kind of hard for me to describe the film. So I'll let you describe the film. Kind of the feel of a short story and kind of a dark short story. But go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. So basically, it's the story of those two boys, Benjamin and Tyler, in the countryside of Quebec, Canada, and they slowly get into this kind of twisted power game while they're exploring a surface mine, and basically things get a bit too far. So really, I wanted to explore the cruelty of childhood through his naivety, you know, really portray childhood, you know, in its raw form. I was really inspired, you know, by my own childhood, and I really, really wanted to work with those kids, to those two boys who was close to their lives, basically.
Yeah, the setting is this something you're familiar with? Or of course, you know, anyone who sees the film will remember this old mine or something with kind of tautsat sticky material. It's like kind of like the Canadian mine version of the Moors or something. Was this something you were familiar with before, or did you find this or what?
Yeah, like I had ideas like reference in my mind, because basically, like, well, there's quicksand in the film, right? So it's just to give a bit of information about it, but so I really wanted a place that looked like almost like a moon landscape, you know? It, like, I didn't want to place it in a very specific location. I wanted to keep it very kind of abstract. So I heard about this town. It's called Thetford Mines. It's an old mining town about 3 hours from Montreal. And it's crazy because you drive around that town and you see those big pile of dust everywhere, you know? So it feels very surreal, very, very surreal.
Yeah, I think somebody compared it to a moonscape, as you said.
Yeah.
We're really trying to contrast, you know, nature and the man-made landscapes in the film.
Yeah, nature has a big, big part in the film, you know, like it's the ultimate antagonist. So it's always like, even like how the boys are dressed and, you know, how they act, how they are. We really wanted to be very primitive, you know, very, very, very raw. So like nature, those landscape really has a big role in the film and the impact. So we looked a lot for it. Like we spent many, many days. I scouted over, I don't know, like...
Over 15
mines. Oh. And that was the last one. And I was like, I remember because at first we were just at the bottom of the hill. I was like, oh no, I don't think it's interesting. I was like, no, let's go. And I climbed up the big hill. And after there was this beautiful blue lake at the bottom. And it was super wide, super, super huge, just like kind of like white ground. Very old, like minerals. I really felt like eerie, you know, like in a dream.
Oh, yeah, the right location. Darn it, it's always the last place you look.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where you don't think it will be.
Yeah.
Well, Evren and Marie, talk a little bit about your roles in this, and get close to that microphone.
Sure.
Closer. Yeah. Don't be afraid to love the mic.
Jeremy has been talking about this for quite some time, almost 3 to 4 years now. And as we were looking for the mines, it's of course a 3-hour drive, so we had a lot of time to talk about the film. So we were developing it a lot, and Maria got on board. I'll have her talk about her involvement later. But a big part that I took is in the casting as well. We were there and we found the kids 8 months before the film, and we rehearsed with them for over 8 months. as their non-actors, and we really got them to embody their characters and be their characters.
Oh, and you did an excellent job, because those are, I mean, that for non-actors, yes, that's an amazing, that's
Where'd
an amazing
job. Where'd
you
find those job. Kids?
Those kids are amazing. Like, well, we basically started casting in Montreal like a year before the shoot, and like Jeremy quickly realized that those actors in Montreal who were actors, professional actors, were not raw enough to like really play well and incarnate those characters. So we started wild casting, and we went really near the set location. So it was in Thetford Mines, and we reached out about like, 50 kids.
15 schools.
15 school, and like we had 50 kids in audition. So it was really like a long process to really get to find those two amazing kids. And Jeremy have been rehearsing a lot with them and rewriting the script with like all the interaction he got with the kids and how like he really built up like the story and the character around those kids too. So it's been a nice process that really brings a lot to the film, I think.
I was going to ask about that. So if you're working with non-actors or kids who aren't used to acting, you would have to direct them in a different way than you would if you're working with professional actors. Tell us a little bit about that process.
Totally, totally. So basically, I didn't give them any scripts.
Ah, okay.
So I kind of told them the story, and then afterwards, you know, I'm an adult, so I can write about those boys, but it's my adult perspective. It's never going to be exactly right. So just by going on location with them, letting them free, giving them some direction, I'll do this, do that, the improvising, like, it was already more real. And they were really brilliant, very open to it, to my direction. So even during the takes, I was just like telling them to do this or that. It was always a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it never, for even them, it never felt scripted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was basically, it was a very different process, because, you know, with like actors, it's really clear and we rehearse the shot exactly how you planned them. But there's more like a kind of documentary almost aspect to it. It's really more free, more instinctive. And yeah, like sometimes it was just like saying some very funny lines. And I was like, I need to put that back in the script. I was always rewriting the script, so it was very clear for like everybody on set, like what we were doing. But for the two kids, no, like it was, we were saying before every take, I was like working with them, making them like rehearse a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The rehearsal process was so long that a lot of the scenes are inspired from those days that we spent with them. So, you know, looking into the building or throwing rocks, all of those situations happened for real and really inspired.
Yeah, and in the very opening scene of the film, it opens with one of the boys just really knocking very intensely on a door, being locked in this really beautiful abandoned train, you know, and just like asking for help. And then his friend comes in and is like, okay, like he's kind of playing around with him. But this, like, not wanting to let him out of the bathroom of the abandoned train, you know. So actually this scene happened for real. Like they were playing around and one of the two boys did that. And I was like, okay, guys, like, let's do that again. I put my iPhone out and we did it a couple times together. And like we kind of rechanged the scene so it was more shorter, more, you know, strong, more direct. So, yeah, it's been a lot of playing around, being their friends, you know, really being their. And I had to become a child again.
Well, I think you had to really get their trust. They had to be able to trust you to.
I was the only semi-adult person on set.
You were the go-between.
But
between.
He was certainly a child on, well, a child. he was living his childhood.
A child at heart.
Yeah.
So how many days did you shoot with these kids?
It was 5 days.
That's it?
Of shoot. Yeah, only 5 days. It was pretty intense. And yeah, because there's a quicksand in the film. That was really technically hard and complicated. So that was a big challenge.
Unsafe.
Unsafe?
Yeah.
I'll put that out there right now.
Yeah, we really planned it out well. So that's why we had like always to kind of like change our planning, because the quicksand was not quite ready. So, yeah.
Have to put a little credit that no Canadian youths were harmed in the film end of this production.
Yeah, exactly.
No child protective services on set.
Yeah.
And by the by, fauve. The title means what?
Yeah. So fauve is it's a French word. There's not quite the right translation. That's why I kept it in French. Like the direct translation would be like wild beasts or beasts. But what is very interesting with fauve, it's a color in French, and that color is kind of like that orangey brownish town color. So it in my film there's a big symbolic with that color without giving it too much away, and also it's like I said, my film's so primitive, so close to nature, and fauve is those really wild beasts, you know, in nature. So I see my two kids, you know, as being those wild beasts. Also, Favism is a beautiful current where we're like put really nature forward with vivid colors. And in my film, the last frame of my film really reminded me of this current, Favism, which is like a big landscape of the countryside. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what kind of reception has this film had? I mean, obviously it got into Sundance. What else is on the horizon for this film?
Well, right now, I mean, like, as Sundance was not clearly planned, it was really like a long shot that kind of amazed us to get in. But like, yeah, I mean, like the news spread pretty quickly, and like we've been contacted by a few festivals already, and I'm sure like this is going to be going pretty well for this film, because like we couldn't ask for a better premiere than Sundance. So
this is your world premiere at this festival.
Exactly.
Oh, that's great.
That's the Shorts number three. Does Sundance ever tell you when you're in, you know, part of a compendium, a program, do you get any information from Sundance about where you are in the program, you know, what precedes you and what you're leading into? So you have some idea of, you know, how you're going to play to the audience.
Yeah, no, it's special to be in a short program, because there's this film before and after you, so it's going to clearly influence how people are going to perceive your film. But the film is pretty visceral, you know, it's pretty intense in terms of emotion, so we're lucky to put us at the very end of the program, you know, we're ending the program. Oh. And it was nice because I could see people, they were just hiding, you know, like under their hands and like, because it becomes intense in parts. So the reaction was very nice. And also the two boys, the two main actors, they flew actually from Quebec.
They're here?
Yeah,
all right.
They're here.
Yeah, good.
It was the people are so happy to see them, you know, in person.
Okay, and that's a good choice. That's a good film as the end note on a program.
Yeah.
And you are in Shorts program number three. And let's see, you've been you've had a couple of showings already, but your next you're just about done, aren't you? You have one at Friday at the Holiday 4 at 1 p.m. So the people that are fans of the Shorts at Sundance, but you know, remember Shorts number three and make a note to get to that one.
Yes, because that's your last chance. Yeah. Here at Sundance this coming Friday at the Holiday. Yes. Shorts program three. Yeah.
So thank you, Jeremy, Evren, and Maria. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming in.
Hi, this is Greg Cropper of Jones Waldo Park City, a Park City law office. I've been a big fan of KPCW since its first broadcast back in 1980. Jones Waldo's been representing clients from Summit and Wasatch counties since 1875. You can find us at joneswaldo.com.
Mountain Money on KPCW is sponsored in part by Columbus Pacific Properties, introducing Apex Residences, 63 ski-through community residences located at Park City's expanded Canyon Village, with clubhouse amenities, heated outdoor pool, and in-house concierge. Information at apexparkcity.com.
G'day, this is Ashley from Campus Coffee, happy to sponsor programming on KPCW. We can't wait to serve the Park City locals this winter. We're excited by our breakfast and lunch menu to complement our espresso drinks. Campos Coffee is open daily at the base of Park City Mountain Resort, up the stairs from the ice rink next to the Adirondack chairs. CamposCoffee.com.
¶¶
And we're back with the Sundance Reel, and I'm Rick Bruff, and here with my co-host Stacy Demalski. And we're here with a film from the World Cinema Dramatic Competition. And you know, sometimes at Sundance you get carried away. You just want to see the picture with the that'll bring out the stars, or the one that's going to become the next hot thing. And the thing is that the International Film Competition often brings out the stuff that is some of the best stuff there, and stuff that you won't have a chance to see again. And this is and this is a good example of that. Holiday is it's kind of a dark film, let's say, but it is definitely a film to get out to see if you want to see some of the best of the international competition. We have the director, Isabella Etloff, is
yep,
that right?
That's
and
right.
And Victoria Carmen Sonne.
Son.
Yeah. The lead actress who gives a remarkable performance, and I would say that really, even if you weren't here right now.
Thank you.
So, Isabella, if you could explain a little bit of the world you set up here for us.
Well, yeah, like you said, it's a dark film, but it's very light. So we really wanted to work with having the colors as bright as possible, and just everything as lighted as possible, because it's a film about evil in a very commercialized, commodified world where everything is like the whole world is a bag of candy, and everything has a bright color, and everything is fun and easy and quick. Mm-hmm. And that's where the real evil thrives, I suppose.
Now, people can't see you, but you're a very beautiful, vibrant woman, and this is a dark, violent movie. And yeah. I'm just wondering where that came from in you. What part of you was able to conjure up? Because it's always interesting when you have that dichotomy of the filmmaker or the creator, and it's just this nothing like you would expect to have coming from that movie.
It's just because I put this yellow shirt on. Otherwise, you'd have seen my darkness.
No, you're very
can't
adorable.
You see the tattoo on her neck?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I got these raven tattoos on my neck, on my chest hair. Mm-hmm. I'm a person who read a lot and very early, so I was a brooding child.
That helps.
Yeah, that helps. And I was inspired by Nabokov, who wrote Lolita way too early. Mm-hmm. It's like Nabokov seduced me. And I've always been interested in all aspects of life. Mm-hmm. And of course I've been in some fucked up... Oh, sorry. Sorry, in the Europe we don't
nobody,
care.
Nobody heard it.
Okay, good. some bad relationships and some weird relationships, starting all the way back with my father, of course, mm-hmm. like with everyone else, and some men that have not been all good, but very exciting. Mm-hmm. So I've had my share of life. Mm-hmm. And I suppose some of that is in the movie.
Well, yeah, because the movie, it does, it prevents... it presents a very exciting, yeah. You know, oh my gosh, my life is just a party. Yeah. It's just everything is just going from one fun thing to the next until it takes a weird, dark yeah. turn. And that's life. You know, you'll be going along and then yeah. all of a sudden something unexpected happens.
Yeah, but it's not so unexpected after all. I think it's embedded in that
yes.
very world that when you're spinning faster and faster and faster, that
it's got to implode.
Yeah, exactly.
At some time.
Exactly. You got to hit a wall. And that's what happens. And for me, it's sort of a metaphor for capitalism, mm-hmm. Like that we are all in a world that's spinning faster and faster, and we're gonna hit a wall, you know. And you guys already did in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not us personally, but
yeah.
the United States.
Yeah. So there's it's dangerous to not stop and think, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the style is kind of right. Scenes kind of tend to open at this kind of contemplative, very, very attractive, as you said, very bright looking world, and it's great fun to watch, and then kind of the hints of what's going on in the behind the scenes, begin to kind of creep out.
Yeah.
And Victoria, we have you. You know, you're playing kind of the there could be different terms for it: a mistress, a mall, the eye candy,
and the first lady, the princess, yeah, the gangster's wife,
the princess. Yes, and and much of the time, it's kind of a very interior performance that you're called upon to give. And in terms of what kind of image did you have going into this role, or what direction did Isabella give you?
It's fun because I just realized I said thank you when you said I did like a interior performance. So I guess that was
That was supposed to be a compliment.
I think that was one of the things we aimed for. In a way, I mean, in terms of like Sasha, the character that I'm playing, she's like going into a world that's definitely not her home decor, you know, if you can say so. She's entering this criminal crook like group world family, where every like rule, every dynamic is very like strict and outlined, and if you step just a little bit outside the line, you will get punished. So I think that for Sasha, it's a lot of the time just about trying to experience and making the most out of it, and just like blend with the wallpaper, if you can say so.
And also she's busy understanding everything, you know.
She is.
So she's listening.
Taking in.
There's one scene I did want to ask you about, and you probably know what it is, but a lot of the cruelty and the degradation and such is hinted at or behind the scenes or heard. There is one kind of hardcore scene. We could say it's definitely effed up. And it is about 50 miles away from a PG-13 rating. And Victoria, you know, how as an actress, how do you deal with something that won't give details, but it's pretty explicit and degrading?
Well, I mean, I feel like me and Isabella, we share the same belief that things, they happen a certain way, and when you're making a film, then it's quite nice if you show it. So I think we agreed from the very beginning that we was just gonna show what was going on. And we're both like quite ambitious about like creating picture of reality that sounds a bit boring, maybe because cinema is also a fantasy, but in a certain way to not like hide in the bushes, but maybe like to get people to emotionally and visually connect the emotions and the vision. Sometimes you have to receive like the whole picture. So I think we agreed a lot about how it was gonna.
How was it to direct that?
Yeah.
It was actually surprisingly easy. We had more issues with other scenes that weren't on paper, so strange, but where the borders were not clearly enough defined. But this one, because everyone was so focused on getting it right, I mean, we had prosthetics and makeup and special effects and a lot of people, you know, working and VFX and SFX working together, and a very, very technical direction.
Yeah.
And with a very particular steps that we were going to go through. So actually it was so well prepared that making it wasn't so hard. And the emotional reaction we got from both actors was very, very natural and very intense in exactly the way we needed. So that was actually not the most difficult scene to do in the movie. For me.
Either for me.
Yeah.
Good. Huh? Yeah. You never know, right?
Yeah. it's when the more you prepare, the more interesting surprises you get.
That's true.
And right. I do like the feeling that you when some of the more dramatic things happen, either sexually or the violence, I like the way that you lay the groundwork for this is that there's nothing special happening with this scene, and then all of a sudden this stuff occurs. It's just another day in paradise, and then boom,
which is life.
Yeah.
Well, you guys, your screenings are. What have you had so far?
Oh, we premiered today.
Yeah. Oh, only today. Oh.
Yeah, tonight. Yeah. We had a press screening.
Prospector at 8:30 on Sunday, so your audience is your first chance for this.
Yeah.
And then Tuesday at the Redstone One. Mm-hmm. Wednesday you're back at Prospector at about 5:30,
mm-hmm.
and down in Salt Lake. Well, we don't. Hey, it's in Salt Lake. We don't
Broadway.
Need to mention
Who cares,
that one.
Right?
and the Saturday is at the screening is at the Yarrow. Is that correct?
Or it's the Ray now, I think.
The Ray, it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. At 3 p.m. So if you want to get a remarkable look at kind of a remarkable world,
another side of life.
Yes, yeah. Holiday. Thank you very much, Victoria and Isabella, for coming.
Thank you so much.
And I always love seeing women in movies like this. Nice job,
thank
ladies.
You. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
And we're back again with the Sundance Reel. I'm Rick Bruff and my co-host Stacy Domalski. And well, while we're on the theme of some of the better things to see in the World Cinema Dramatic Competition, we have a film called Butterflies from officially, is this a Turkish film, Tolga? Tolga Karaçelik.
That's bad. Okay. Karaçelik.
And his leading lady, Tuğçe.
Yes, Tuğçe.
Tuğçe. And I'll let you go ahead with the premise here, but it's kind of interesting because when I watched the screener, it was like, At first, did they make a mistake and they put three different movies together? Because one character is an astronaut in a political dispute. Another is a voiceover, and another is this woman with an oblivious husband. And I thought, wait a minute, are these three movies? But go ahead.
That was the idea, actually. Like, I wanted to shoot a film that is really going from side to side, and I wanted to see how well I can direct it and keep it in one place. Especially the beginning is also a different genre, and it's also moving between genres. The question is, how can you try to make people cry when they just saw an exploding chicken. So that is kind of like
an exploding chicken just never gets old.
It's hard to get sponsors though.
Yeah.
<The exploding chicken.
laughs> yeah.
Was it? Yeah. Is this going to be, you know, another one of those movies that have the credit at the end that says no chickens were actually exploded in the making of this film?
I had nastier ideas. Put black and white pictures of three chicken and make them start like 2004 and 2017 or something like that. Then people would be really, I would be in trouble most probably. So I didn't do that joke.
Okay. Yeah, they wouldn't get it, or they wouldn't take it kindly.
Yeah, most probably not.
But these three different siblings, sort of what's their situation at the beginning of the movie, and then how did you get them on a road trip?
Well, the idea for me writing the script started in the funeral of my uncle, and I lost my uncle, and he was a poet who made me read Kafka when I was 11 years old, and like. He's the one who messed up with my life, actually. And because I started reading Mayakovsky poetry when I was 8. So
that's a little early.
It doesn't get better from there. And so in his funeral, I used to write poetry. And I was like kind of like being published in underground magazine, stuff like that. So he always told me that he wanted to be an underground poet like me. And so in his funeral, they made me do the speech. And I said, you always wanted to be an underground poet. Now you had become one. Congratulations. No one left.
So oh, that's a great joke.
Yeah, Imam was looking at me like I was, I wouldn't say it on the radio. So it started like that. I knew that Masar would be laughing at it. So in the credits, the father's name is, that's why Masar, the father that they had lost. So I wanted to make a kind of like a comedy around the funeral, which, as you could understood from my joke, I'm not that a funny guy, so it's a strange combination of not funny guy trying to make a comedy. So it started like this, the idea. And then I came up with the characters. The characters are all in different, their own worlds. One of them is when they lost their mother, the story goes like this. When they lost their mother, their father sent them away because he couldn't handle them. So one of them he sent to an aunt who's living in Germany. So he was raised in Germany, and he's raised to be an astronaut who is on strike because this year's budget also had been made official, and there's no budget for them to send it to space. And he says basically a really logical thing, like, if you had stolen all my life trying to teach me to live in space, to do my toilet in space, and like do everything that's needed on space, and 10 years of teaching this, and you're not sending me. Still not space, and he's on strike with the astronaut costumes, and they have those strike marches.
He's retaliating.
Tuce, she could tell better maybe than me, but she is the kindergarten teacher who is in the verge of a nervous breakdown, and she's trying to get a divorce from a guy who never stops speaking. Who is acted
doesn't
by me, the guy who's
her.
Speaking, my character, who is standing next to me actually right now. And the third person is a guy, kind of like a loser actor, who is never happy with his life, now doing voiceovers for home videos. You know, you never like your own voice in the home video, so he does the job for you. He comes in and does the voiceover for the cat, sometimes writes jokes. So they are called back after 25 years to the village that they left. They didn't see, they were not in contact with each other for quite 25 years. So when they come back, they found out that their father's dead. So that's the idea of the story. So they, in the will of his father, their father, it is says that bury me when the butterflies comes, hence the name of the movie, because it's a village where millions of butterflies come to die. It's one day in August, which no one knows which day it will be. So they wait. Three siblings who doesn't know each other that much, who doesn't try to figure out who their father was and why he called them, is waiting for butterflies to come to the village to bury him.
Yeah. And Tuce, talk a little about your character. That you have lines like asking your brother. So when you're not an astronaut, what do you do?
Yes.
and you're this combination of, well, sometimes you can be kind of crazy and off the rails, let us say, and other times quite thoughtful and poignant. So What was your approach to that character?
Yes, it was very funny because she looks like calm, but inside of her there is a monster
just waiting to come out.
Yes, waiting to come out. She wants to talk about what she wants to talk. She's talking like that after that.
So your character's a kindergarten teacher?
Yes.
So that would be frustrating because you have to be a certain way mm-hmm. in front of a kindergarten class.
Yes.
And if you're just bubbling underneath the surface, it's going to be hard to keep the lid on that.
Yes.
So as an actor, that must have been a fun role for you.
Yes, yes.
Even though the character isn't fun necessarily, but for you as an actor, that was a fun challenge.
Yes, yes, of course, exactly. It was like that.
How did you prepare for that? Was there anything that you...
I worked on her dancing, by the way.
Oh.
We rehearsed a little bit before the shootings. It helps me to contact with my siblings, brothers,
mm-hmm.
and contact with my characters. And then we build up together the characters with the director.
Well, I never had seen a group this much wanting to rehearse. This is my third feature. I've done lots of six shorts, I think, till now. Mm-hmm. They made me so tired. I once was up to this point saying, please stop rehearsing. I have a film to make. It was like they always wanted to rehearse. They were theater actors. She's mm-hmm. from theater, and the other three siblings are from good theater actors also. They wanted to rehearse and rehearse and rehearse.
Yeah, okay. And the results of all that, you've got your first coming up at tomorrow at the Prospector. And
yes.
Again, Wednesday morning at Prospector, and after a sojourn in Salt Lake. And then Friday at either the Yarrow or the Ray, but that's Friday at 6 p.m. And really nice to see you. One of the stars of Butterflies, and Tolga, the director of Butterflies.
Hope to see you all there.
Yes.
And as an oblivious husband.
Director / oblivious husband.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Amy Roberts with Park City Hospital, a not-for-profit community hospital supporting KPCW. While you may never need to outrun a cheetah, the sports performance team at Park City Hospital can help you do so using our new high-speed treadmill. Whether you're an elite athlete or just looking to better your PR, our team of experts will help you run faster, get stronger, and increase your agility. The high-speed treadmill is designed to go up to 31 miles an hour, allowing you to outrun and outlast the competition and cheetahs. Call 435-658-7350 to book a session.
Additional funding for programming is funded in part by Sotheby's Cares, the philanthropic arm of Summit Sotheby's International Realty. Kathleen Barlow, now with Raymond James and Associates Incorporated. Kathleen.Barlow@RaymondJames.com. Park City Bike Demos, Kern's Showroom, next to Adolph's. Park City Day School, small community, big education, infinite possibilities. ParkCityDayschool.org, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Mark Baker here from Esco Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical, and we are the proud sponsors of the Marketplace Morning Report on KPCW. Remember, the better the airflow, the warmer you'll be. Don't block air vents, and don't forget to install a carbon monoxide detector this winter season. More information at escoutah.com or 855-ESCO-NOW.
Listening to KPCW Park City 91.7 FM. Up next, NPR News.